clear that the battle against terrorists and Syrian opposition groups that might violate the current truce would continue. He claimed that President Assad was ready for compromise and dialogue. And Vladimir Putin said he was proud of his troops. Without a powerful army and navy, the president said, a sovereign Russia cannot exist.
The leader of the Afghan Taliban, Mullah Akhtar Mansour, has told his fighters to prepare for what he called the final push in the ongoing conflict in the country. In a message posted on the Taliban's website, he urged them to unite in the hope of what he called good victories in the coming months. EU leaders are meeting in Brussels shortly to try to finalise a deal with Turkey to end irregular migration to the Greek islands. The president of the European Commission, Jean-Claude Juncker, said he expected a deal to be reached during the summit.
I am pretty sure and confident that we will reach an agreement with Turkey today or tomorrow. I would like to say that the arrangements we have with Turkey, which are not complete at the moment, will respect European law and the Geneva Convention.
The US theme park company SeaWorld has announced that it will no longer breed orcas or killer whales. It said the current generation of animals would be the last in its care. The company, which has a variety of parks across the United States, has faced intense criticism for keeping orcas in captivity after a documentary highlighted the impact on the animals. BBC World Service News.
Support for WMC comes from the Empire State Plaza Performing Arts Center, presenting spring concerts by Joan Baez, Arlo Guthrie, Judy Collins, and Roger McGuinn at The Egg in Albany, theegg.org. Mark Lawson Antiques, Saratoga Springs, and Colony, New York. Purchasing jewelry and diamonds, coin collections, Chinese and Asian antiques, fine art and estates, 518-587-8787. And Odyssey Bookshop, South Hadley. Michelle Hoover discusses her novel, Bottomland, the story of two young girls who vanish in the middle of the night, March 23rd at 7 p.m., odysseybks.com.
This is WAMC Regional News. I'm Ray Graff. In the headlines, a state judge has rejected a lawsuit seeking to close a loophole in New York campaign finance law that lets wealthy individuals use limited liability companies to secretly give millions of dollars to candidates. WAMC's Brian Shields reports.
Justice Lisa Fisher says there have been numerous attempts in the legislature to close the loophole, and the matter is best resolved by lawmakers. She first rejected the lawsuit on grounds that it's too late to challenge the 1996 decision by the State Board of Elections to treat the LLCs or limited liability companies like individuals. That lets them donate up to $150,000 a year to a candidate without identifying their owners. Critics want them subject to the $5,000 corporate limit and require them to disclose the information on owners. The suit was brought by New York University's Brennan Center, three state lawmakers, and others they plan to appeal. For WAMC News, I'm Brian Shields.
A New York pizza shop owner who admitted he tried to recruit people for the Islamic State group is facing sentencing this afternoon. WAMC's Jessica Blaustein Marshall reports.
Prosecutors are expected to recommend a 22-and-a-half-year prison term for Mufid Elfji when he appears today in federal court in Rochester. Elfji pleaded guilty in December to attempting to provide material support to a terrorist organization. Authorities say he tried to recruit three people to join the Islamic State group to fight in Syria. He was operating a convenience store and pizza shop in Rochester at the time. Pre-sentencing court filings show that since his arrest, Elfji has met with FBI and prosecutors and renounced the Islamic State group and its methods. Elfji was born in Yemen and is a naturalized U.S. citizen. For WAMC News, I'm Jessica Blaustein Marshall.
Vermont officials say test results in North Bennington are showing more water contamination near a former ChemFab plant. WAMC's Patrick Garrett reports.
Governor Peter Shumlin and environmental and health officials met with community members last night. They said 134 test results have been received so far and show 94 private wells had levels of the chemical PFOA that exceeded the standard considered acceptable by the state. The levels ranged from 32 parts per trillion to 2,730 parts per trillion. The Vermont Department of Health considers 20 parts per trillion to be an acceptable amount of PFOA in drinking water. Shumlin says the Vermont Department of Environmental Conservation has determined that more testing is needed on as many as 100 additional wells in three areas outside of the initial 1.5-mile radius of the former plant. Patrick Garrett, WAMC News.
A first-in-the-nation system allowing casino patrons to set limits on their betting is expected to be unveiled next month in Massachusetts. State gambling regulators today will talk about the electronic system being piloted at Plain Ridge Park, a slots parlor and harness racing track. That is the first casino in Massachusetts. Vermont is still on track to be the first state in the country to require labeling of genetically modified foods in July after a U.S. Senate vote failed to move forward Wednesday. Our North Country Bureau Chief Pat Bradley has more.
The Senate procedural vote leaves intact a Vermont law that will require GMO labeling beginning July 1st. Governor Peter Shumlin hailed the development but says the fight isn't over yet. Vermont Businesses for Social Responsibility public policy manager Dan Barlow tempers his excitement.
This is a temporary victory right now. This bill will come back again. And we're worried that our support will be chipped away.
U.S. Senator Patrick Leahy says laws like Vermont's are meant to provide consumers with information about what they're buying. I'm Pat Bradley, WAMC News.
Connecticut Governor Danielle Molloy is using his executive authority to make $65 million in cuts to executive branch agencies. The Democratic governor said yesterday the General Assembly will also need to pass legislation to cover the rest of the shortfall. The current fiscal year in Connecticut is at least $220 million in the red. On Wall Street at the top of the hour, Dow up 72 at 17,398. NASDAQ down 3, 4760. Paul Caiano calling for mostly cloudy skies today, mild, showers developing, maybe a thunderstorm, highs in the mid to upper 50s, cloudy, a shower possible tonight in the upper 30s, mostly cloudy, becoming windy, colder tomorrow with rain and snow showers, early highs in the low 40s, but temperatures will fall in the afternoon into the 30s. At last report, fair skies, 46 degrees in Plattsburgh, cloudy, 48 in Holyoke, Massachusetts, fair and 54 in Sussex, New Jersey. Partly cloudy, 52 in Albany. More WAMC News at noon with Brian Shields at Midday Magazine.
Support for WAMC comes from the Vascular Group, specializing in vascular health with 10 locations in upstate New York, bringing internationally recognized care to your hometown, albanyvascular.com. And Alarms of Berkshire County, offering full-service residential and commercial security and life safety monitored systems based on individual or corporate needs for nearly 35 years, alarmsofberkshirecounty.com. The Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York, open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, and Sunday, 12 to 5, hydecollection.org. Time and Space Limited, Hudson, screening independent and documentary movies, live simulcasts of the Met Opera, Bolshoi Ballet, National Theatre of London, timeandspace.org. And Clear Yoga in Rhinebeck, an Iyengar yoga practice, hosting a day with Jenny Capular this Sunday, clearyogarhinebeck.com.
Consumers and the environment. I'm Randy Simon, and this is Earthwise, a look at our changing environment. China passed the U.S. as the largest emitter of greenhouse gases on Earth back in 2007, mostly due to manufacturing. However, the great majority of all the products China produces are exported to the rest of the world. China's per capita consumption-based environmental footprint is actually small. If you put the responsibility for environmental impacts on the consumer instead of the producer, we are all the culprits. The United States is the worst overall performer when it comes to per capita greenhouse gas emissions. The countries with the highest consumption have about 5.5 times higher environmental impact than the world average. Consumers are directly responsible for about 20% of all carbon impacts, such as those from driving our cars and heating our homes. But secondary impacts, the environmental effects from producing the goods and products we buy, are far greater. And it isn't just carbon. Water use is a prime example. The water we use to take showers, wash dishes, and the like is, no pun intended, but a drop in the bucket. The amount of water needed to produce foods and other products greatly surpasses our individual use. A recent study in the Journal of Industrial Ecology looked at these things in great detail and concluded that consumers are responsible for more than 60% of global greenhouse gas emissions and up to 80% of the world's water use. We like to put the blame on someone else, like the government and businesses, but when it comes to the impact on the environment, all of us and how we consume the world's resources are the biggest factor, and it is a problem we all must face. For more information on this topic and other environmental news, visit us at earthwiseradio.org or find us on Facebook. Earthwise is a production of WAMC Northeast Public Radio.
Support for WAMC comes from Evoke Style in Stuyvesant Plaza, an Albany resource for shoes and boots from designers such as Arch, Nayote, AS98, and Gabor for office, parties, and more. EvokeStyle.com. and Gordon Fire Equipment, celebrating 60 years of offering fire extinguisher service and inspections to businesses and organizations in the Hudson Valley. Family-owned since 1956, GordonFire.com. The College of St. Rose, Albany, New York, offering both academic scholarships and Phi Theta Kappa scholarships to eligible transfer students, strose.edu/transfer. And Jenkinstown Motors, New Paltz, offering foreign and domestic auto repair by Scott Cullen and a team of technicians specializing in Japanese models, jenkinstownmotors.com.
The musicians of Malwick will be presenting a special collaborative concert this Sunday with the Siena College Chorus and Chamber Singers under the direction of Dr. Timothy Reno, celebrating the suffragettes and the bicentennial of the birth of Elizabeth Cady Stanton. Titled Declaration of Sentiments, the concert will feature works of American female composers Marion Bauer, Amy Beach, and Daybreak of English composer Rebecca Clark. They'll also present the world premiere of a work staged by Suffragette Texts by Kathleen Ballantyne. The event will be held at Druthers Brewery on Broadway in Albany. To tell us more, we welcome Anne-Marie Barker-Schwartz, Director of Musicians of Malwick, Jennifer Dorsey, who heads the McCormick Center at Siena College, and Mr. Druthers Brewery himself, George DePiro. Good morning, all.
Good morning.
Good morning.
How are you?
We're well. Great. How about you?
Excellent. I'm fine. Very nice to have you all here. So, Anne-Marie, let us begin with you as to how this event came to be. I know we'll get to the beer partnership in a minute, which actually has a long history.
It does indeed.
With you and your organization. But let us talk about how this particular concert and topic came about.
Well, last spring, Tim Reno and I were discussing a collaborative concert. Musicians of Malwick usually accompanies his choruses at Siena College. And we were thinking about doing an all-women composer concert. And in sort of the talking this through, it became obvious that we wanted to focus it on American women. And then in just complete serendipity, we were speaking with the Tenbrecht Mansion about possible collaborations, and I mentioned that we were doing this particular concert and that it was the bicentennial of Elizabeth Cady Stanton. And the Tenbrecht Mansion said, oh my gosh, she's related to Abraham Tenbrecht. And things just snowballed from there. And I do mean snowballed. And so the concert grew way actually beyond its original scope. And we decided that we would have it be not just the Siena College Chorus and Chamber Singers with musicians of Malwick accompanying, but that we would have our own individual sets of music interspersed between the choral works. And as I started to research music for that, I had been a fan of Marion Bauer for a while, and I found some songs that were in the Library of Congress for soprano and string quartet. As far as we can tell, they have not been publicly performed before. They're only in manuscript. They're not printed. And, in fact, one of the songs is unfortunately lost. So there were four songs originally, but we're only able to do three at this point. And then I found some pieces for solo flute that were also in manuscript that haven't been performed. And Marion Bauer was the first female composer to study with Nadia Boulanger, the first female composer to be in the American Society of Composers and Publishers, invited by Aaron Copland. She taught Milton Babbitt, very, very seminal figure in music, not just in American female music, but in music in general. So we're delighted to have these things on the program. Rebecca Clark was actually a British-American composer who spent the majority of her career from the late 30s on here. And Daybreak is this beautiful setting of a John Donne text. And then the Kathleen Ballantyne piece, which is the world premiere, is based on texts by Alice Duer Miller, which Jennifer can actually tell you a lot about her text and who she was. So we feel fantastic about this concert. It has so many different musical elements in it, from the world premieres to the standard chamber music from the period. And also we have some temperance songs. We have some political march songs. So there's a really wide range of music.
As I mentioned, Jennifer Dorsey heads the McCormick Center at Siena College. So give us a sense of your participation in this and what all you'll be doing.
Yeah, so when Anne-Marie came to talk to me about the program, she reminded me that it's the 200th birthday of Elizabeth Cady Stanton's birth. And I reminded her that we're fast approaching the 100th anniversary of the women's suffrage amendment being passed. You probably know that in New York, there was an amendment that was brought to the vote, brought to referendum in 1915 that failed, and then one that passed in 1917, and that gave real energy to the ultimate passage of the women's suffrage amendment to the United States Constitution. And so there was all kinds of stuff to be celebrating and talking about. Also, as Anne-Marie mentioned, our composer, Kate Ballantyne, she had developed this piece using text that came from a poem that was published in 1915 called Are Women People? And the author of the poem actually produced a series of poems that took the language of Woodrow Wilson, who, of course, was a celebrated celebrated during World War I for promoting self-determination for peoples all over the world. And Alice wanted to take issue with his unwillingness to support self-determination for women in America and wrote a number of poems mocking him and satirizing him. And so that's how I came to be involved, to sort of provide some historic context for what was happening and what we were singing about.
And that historical context is fascinating because there are so many overlaps, right? I mean, just in what you were describing, mm-hmm. there's so much that fits in.
Yeah, so I'm a history educator. I teach history at Siena College, and I think this is such a fantastic way to introduce students and the community to the whole history of the women's suffrage movement, to use music, to use the careers of these composers. We think a lot about music when we think about the African-American civil rights movement. We don't necessarily think about music when we think about women's civil rights, but that's very much what this production on Sunday is about, using music to talk about the struggle for women's civil rights in the 20th century.
So how did you decide to put it into a bar?
Well, what better place? Actually, there's a long tradition in America of performing in bars, even with serious classical music. And if you go back to the late 1700s, early 1800s, especially in smaller metropolitan regions, there were not concert halls yet. So when performers came through the area, they would perform in what they would call assembly halls or meeting rooms. And these were nothing but glorified tavern rooms. And in Albany, in the late 1700s, the big place to perform was Mr. Angus's Assembly Hall. And so George DePiro, who is Mr. Druthers, has a long association with us. And when I approached him about performing a concert in his beautiful new brewery, he was more than enthusiastic. And it's kind of nice in a way that it's full circle to this performance practice that dates back to the early 1800s.
And as I mentioned earlier, you have a long history with this organization, George.
Yeah. when was Poor Soldier?
2009.
Wow. Okay. So, yes, it was back in 2009 that I met Anne-Marie. She had the idea to stage George Washington's favorite comic opera, The Poor Soldier, and wanted to know if I would do a co-promotion with her and brew a special beer for the event. And that was kind of a no-brainer because George Washington, colonial times, it's easy to find a beer that was period-specific and modify it for modern palates. And so Poor Soldier Porter was born out of that. And that show was a great success. And the beer dinner that went with it at Schenectady County Community College, where we served the beer, was also really nice. And you know, since then, we've done a couple of other projects. And this one it's a little bit of a stretch, perhaps. It's not so much a stretch to involve beer. It's just that the women's rights movement had the unfortunate side effect of bringing prohibition to the nation. Because
yes.
A lot of the suffragettes were, especially Elizabeth Cady Stanton, were into temperance. And it's like, ooh, okay, so we're going to be celebrating this at the brew pub. That's a tough one. So it happens that March 22nd is the 83rd anniversary of the repeal of Prohibition. So it's only 2 days after the concert. So that's what I say we're celebrating on Sunday, is the 83rd anniversary of the repeal of Prohibition. And to connect a beer to the event, I formulated a pre-Prohibition style Pilsner, which, is, as the name implies, is the kind of Pilsner that was around before Prohibition. In the 19th century, when a wave of German immigrants came over to this country,
they, so in other words, the beer that they were fighting against.
Exactly. Okay. That's exactly it. If Elizabeth Cady Stanton had been drinking beer like she should have been.
This is the alcohol that ticked her off.
Right. This is what she would have been drinking.
I got it.
So they, the German brewers came over. The way this differs from a modern German Pilsner, say, or even an older German Pilsner, or most craft Pilsners that are all malt, and this has corn in it, like a lot of the mega brews today do.
Yes.
The reason originally the beer was brewed with corn is because when the German immigrants came over in the 19th century and started brewing with American barley, they found that the protein content was too high. And so to dilute the protein content, they used a low protein grain like corn to get the protein level to where they wanted. This also had the effect of making the beer cheaper to make, because malt is pretty expensive and corn is pretty cheap. And so even when they started growing better barley in this country, the brewers kept going with using corn as an adjunct because it was more profitable for them. The pre-Prohibition style Pilsner, though, differs, as you'll taste in a moment. Might as well do that.
Yeah, George, TikTok.
Yeah.
I know. Sorry. I get to chatting, and the next thing you know, we're not drinking.
I should say that.
Thank you.
It was Susan B. Anthony who allied with the temperance movement. Women's suffrage and temperance did not necessarily go together in the beginning, but Susan B. Anthony was so just stunned by the effectiveness of the temperance movement that she wanted to be part of that and use their discipline to, in her own organization.
Poor misguided soul.
Poor misguided soul.
So how will it work? You're not like strolling around the place, right?
No.
We'll be marching.
Although it would
there
be cool.
Might be some marching.
I don't think there's going to be room. It's going to be a pretty full show.
Yeah, we're very close to selling out, which is fantastic.
Good.
Do you want to try the beer first, and then I'll tell you something?
All right.
It differs from a modern American light lager in that you smell hops. It's fruity up front, and that's from a hop that's not an old hop. I actually used a very new hop called Equinox. And you do get a little bit of grainy corn in the aroma.
You do? I like that.
Yeah, it's good.
And then on the flavor, you get some corn up front, significant hop flavor, and hop bitterness mixed with a grainy character in the finish.
By the way, this has nothing to do with our conversation. I'm just momentarily curious. But if I were to take out a little bottle of green food coloring and put it in this beer, would you have a heart attack?
No, I wouldn't have a heart attack. I wouldn't serve it like
that.
I mean,
that's like desecration or...
I wouldn't do that to my own beer.
I wouldn't do that to my own beer. I was just curious how you felt about it as a brewer, being very, very proud of the color and the consistency, and then screwing it up with.
Well, you know, I've tried to become less dogmatic about these things over the years. And if a customer wants to...
It's called being a business owner.
Exactly.
Whatever they want.
If a customer wants to corrupt my beer with a lemon or something like that...
Corrupt. It is desecration.
Yes, we let them do that, but I don't say anything anymore about it. I just, our servers know that our Hefeweizen, for example, is served without a lemon. Mm. If the customer asks for a lemon, they are not to try to channel me. They're just to bring the customer what they want.
They're always right.
Exactly.
All right. Okay, so how does it work? They set up of the show.
The setup of the show at 2:00, there's a pre-concert talk. Actually, Jennifer will be on the panel, and George will be on the panel. Byron Nielsen will be there to talk about temperance songs. That's one of his fields of expertise. And who is the other person? Oh, and Kathleen Ballantyne, the composer, will be on the panel. Then at 3 o'clock, the concert starts. There are a few theatrical surprises within the concert. And we're very honored to have Elaine Houston, who's a newscaster from Channel 13.
Yes.
She will be reading the Declaration of Sentiments, which is, of course, the 1848 document that Elizabeth Cady Stanton, with the help of others, mm-hmm. drafted and presented at the Seneca Falls meeting. It's a very important document, and I think it really sets the tone for the concert. We're hoping that people will have a sense between the music and the reading of this document of taking a step back in time to, say, 1916 and sort of feeling the whole political turmoil and the sense of women do not have the vote and things are about to change.
Well, it will be a marvelous afternoon, and we should mention, as you have,
yes.
but just to underscore that tickets are going very, very quickly.
They're going
it's
very
almost
quickly.
Almost sold out. So if
almost
you want to do that, get cracking.
Get cracking. Get right onto our website, which is www.musiciansofmalwick.org, or call our office phone at 518-377-3623. And I should mention there's one other component. Maybe.
Right, the beer dinner. I forgot about that.
Yes.
There's a beer dinner where we're doing a special 1920s themed Prohibition era dinner that where each course is paired with beer. And you can find the menu and all the information on our website.
And there are very few tickets left for that, so do it right away.
All right, and just so people know, it's Musicians of Malwick, and that's M-A-A-L-W-Y-C-K, musiciansofmalwick.org. Jennifer Dorsey, a delight to meet you.
Thank you
very much for
being
with us. Anne-Marie Barker-Schwartz, always good to see you on the program.
Thank you.
And George, thank you very much. The beer is outstanding.
Thank
Congratulations
you.
on another job well done.
Thank you much.
George Shapiro of Druthers Brewery, and again, you can find out more information about the event by going to musiciansofmalwick.org. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.